But if you look at the Millennium Development Goals, we have no idea globally anywhere near where we should be. And it's estimated that by 2015, 2 billion people will be living below the poverty line. It's now $1 a day. By 2015, the equivalent will be $2 a day. And interestingly, in China and India, the fastest growing emerging countries, will have some 70 million of those people, 700 million of those people. Which raises the point that all these countries that are growing substantially are not able, whatever their policies are, social democratic, free market oriented, or more socialist oriented, why would you define China? There's a growing middle class. India now has the largest middle class in the world, it's 500 million in US dollars. There's a growing middle class emerging in society. And those that are being left behind are being left even further behind. There's a new book that's come out, all this was by Paul Collier, called The Bottom Billion. The idea that no matter how fast these economies grow, at this stage, unless there are drastic interventions, the bottom billion will be more wretched and more lost to the world than currently the poor of the world are. So the point I'm trying to make at the end of the day is we've got our own challenges here. We're growing 5.5%, but increasing inequality. It's a global problem. And interestingly, it comes from all forms, more social democratic, more socialist oriented, or free market oriented, or whatever forms of growth you're getting. That's where we are. Okay, so don't try to report to you. But I don't have to report, I have to report to thousands. We're pleased to know, because for those of you who don't know, I write very long reports, you think you write them. Actually, I don't write them. I just put my hands to the typewriter and keys and they just happen. So I have stuff. But anyway, welcome to all. I'm particularly concerned, I'm probably very pleased to see you here. We had meant to write to him, but other studios will return last week, and when we see him this week, welcome back to you. Today, of course, this, presumably, Mr. Delporte will get the program, but you've got it, yeah. This is going to be, I must welcome the TG, you all, and Mr. Malaga, and his team. This is going to be an annual feature, as it were, meaning the last quarter of the year, in terms of the CSMA, in terms of North Portfolio Committee, including ours, is actually to evaluate the annual report of the departments and those who fall within our portfolio. Ideally, each year, what we will do is in the first week or 2 of October, we'll first look at the departments. Then we will look at the Human Rights Commission, the Gender Commission, Legal Aid Board. We won't be able to squeeze all of them into the quarter because we might well have onerous legislation process at the time. So we will start at least in early October and finish maybe in the new year if we have to. We will write a report on each of these, whether it's a one-page report or a five-page report or a 20-page report. We publish first the Doctrine Committee and publish in the ATC. And then this report becomes the basis on which the department appears before us. We have agreed in the committee, and I have exchanged over the phone and correspondence with the teachers, that we will have quarterly reports. Each department is required, in terms of its relations with statements, to present a quarterly report. So what we will do is, each quarter, even if it's a brief briefing, we will hear from the department what it is that they've done in the preceding quarter, what progress has been achieved in fulfilling the goals set out in the strategic targets, in the strategic plan for the period. We also have a representative, Sean Chase, from the Open Society. They are speaking with the department ourselves, I think at some stage of the department too, there is a project on monitoring the budget of departments, various departments, but presumably for our purposes, our own department. They try to track it over a 2 to 3 year period. My first impression is that they could serve both the departments and the portfolio committee in a complementary role. But that is something, you know, that over time they can negotiate. I will arrange for them to speak to our committee, distribute their documents, and we can decide whether we want a relationship with them and if so, what. Obviously, if you're serving the executive and the legislature, there might be some issues of clarity for you, but short case, yeah. So much for now. Basically, the aim here is to listen to the department. They have given us an overview, a slide presentation. And what we're going to do is, measure the targets that they've achieved in the financial year 2006 against the strategic framework, the strategic plan for that year. What Christine's done is that she's done that repeatedly, and the department will take us through also their strategic plan for the period and how far they got to achieving what they set out to do. For those of you who don't have it, Christine, this will be distributed to everybody's got a copy, and you will come in with it as a book. Okay. Finally, Lolly's not here because she's writing exams. We wish her well for that. And we might need to write her a letter congratulating her on becoming a grand. I think those of you don't know, she's now a grand. And we should write to her to wish her well. Thank you. Welcome to Mrs. Liberty.
Okay, over to the department.
Gigi, normally look, there's no rule in Parliament. We, each partly shaped by the personality and character. Maybe the traditions and the movement that we come from here are very different. Some joined us across the floor yesterday. Others have been around 4,000 years. My own preference is that unless you're older than me, I can call you Baba or Tata or something, but the aim is to I can't call Carol Miss Johnson. It was absurd because I sit next to her and we talk all the time. I won't tell you about what. Not about this committee, personally. Also, like JT, I've known JT since 1984. Now, this is absurd for me to call him Mr. John Jeffrey. So, if you don't mind, first name, this Baba Delforte, Opa Delforte. The rest of you, and maybe this is Meruti, Mama Violet, the rest of you, you look younger than me. But if you object, you're a traditional leader, so it doesn't cause the Bangladeshi, right? Unless you're a traditional leader or you're older than me, I think it's simple. I just want to tell them my first name. Anyway. Okay, let's hand over then to Bangladeshi.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee. I must extend the words of congratulations to the Chair for being redeployed to this exciting committee. We hope that you will find it a very enriching experience. I've got the justice team on my side. I've got the CFO, Ms. Sandra Kohn, Mr. Johan Johnson, who is head of budget, Dr. Tevier, who is the COO, Mr. Bonani, who works in our strategy unit, and Swazi in the parliamentary office, based in Cape Town. I propose to go through the slide presentation relatively quickly. I'll attempt at each slide if there's anything important that members may want to follow up on a bit later. I'll try and highlight those particular items. And then at the end, I'll also try to maybe deal with challenges that we as a department continue to experience, just so that members can also be aware of things that regularly will come through.
Can I say, we agree for those of you who come in this week that we will meet from 10 to 1. If we can finish at 12:30, so much the better. But the idea would be we meet till 1, so we can avoid Friday meeting when we don't have to. So I've discussed this and limited agreement, okay?
Okay. The department strategies are those three, so that we try to meet those three for the term of this administration, and then accessing justice for everyone. We think it's important. Enhancing organizational efficiency, we think that's important, and transforming justice sector for staff, that's important. I think my whole presentation and against our strategy, I think what we try and emphasize in the department is what our core business is, so that we don't do each and every little thing that appears attractive. You'll find that in the department chair. This department traditionally used to do quite a lot of things, even on behalf of other departments. And we're still settled with some of those challenges where we perform services on behalf of other departments and so forth and so forth. So those things create problems, and we're trying to move away from them, so that you can focus purely on what is the business of the Department of Justice, which is to offer professional services of a legal nature to various members of the public that will be coming for. In terms of employing our budget of just over 7 billion, those are the amounts that were allocated, 308 million of, allocated towards infrastructure. 60 million of which was going towards the upgrading of various courts. How we try and split this money in any financial year is that we have an ongoing repair and maintenance program where we repair courts that are in a state of disrepair, and once they are repaired, there's the next phase where we have to maintain them in a good state. And that cycle goes on and on and on and on for all of the courts. You know, that would have been covered by a particular budget. We never have in any particular year enough money to cover all of the costs. So there's always a backlog. So each financial year we try and add costs that were previously not covered. So we always work on that particular basis. Unless there's some emergency in one cost that would have been part of the program where we have to try and put it into the program again. But by and large, we try and deal with costs according to those most needy. Some of the money then goes towards the expansion of the court. So you find that maybe a court has four courtrooms, but the workload has grown such that we need to expand and provide for additional rooms. So we try and extend the court as we extend the house and try and accommodate growth in that particular community, that particular court. So in these ones that I mentioned here, part of the infrastructure work going on is an expansion of the court. Then we then try also to spend money on completely new courts, you know, from buying land to putting up infrastructure. That takes usually the most time because the most of the processes devolve to our responsibilities of local government. So getting to purchase land. For example, in Mpumalanga, we're having the biggest problem ever because there's hardly any land available. If it is available, you know, private owners want to sell it at a price that we believe we cannot afford. So there's, wherever there is demand for land, we have the biggest problem. We've managed to find a bit of land that we're now negotiating to purchase. So part of our infrastructure program and part of our strategy of enhancing access to justice through provision of court is hampered upon by those types of challenges as far as infrastructure is concerned. The other issue about infrastructure that members must be aware of is that the primary responsibility for dealing with this is the public works. So we normally engage with public works by obviously urging them to deal with issues, you know, with relative speed. We try and show the extent to which we can assist to help them move at speed, but unfortunately we don't have ultimate control over it. So if public works comes and says, you know, we can't do your site clearances this quarter, you know, we can meet our targets, we may fail on that particular objective, but it's one of those misnomers in government that on an area where we directly are impacted upon, we have no control whatsoever on the process in all material terms. Even to a large extent in cleaning services, you know, we don't have control of that process. So we are engaging with public works all the time to try and do something about this. So that's the whole scenario around infrastructure. The last bullet point is 35 mobile courts. What we have in justice, again, this is a historical thing. We have magisterial districts where there are main courts. Outside of those magisterial districts, we have what are branch courts and what are periodical courts. Obviously, periodical courts, they exist, you know, let's say once a week or once a fortnight. They are usually courts away from the main court. And we've looked at this phenomenon of periodical courts, and with the minister's agreement and permission, we've concluded as a department that there should be no such thing as a periodical court. It can never make sense for anybody to wait for the next time a magistrate or a court official comes to town to open their infrastructure and work. So in areas where we find that we have this periodical court, we are providing additional admin officials so that they open, you know, even if there is no cases running and there is no magistrate at a particular point in time, the department should be able to offer other administrative services anyway in those parts of town, and we should be able to do that relatively easily. But we clearly shouldn't have something called a periodical court. You know, it must be a proper court. So we'll be moving away from that terminology of periodical court. So if you don't see reference to periodical court in future, you don't understand it in that particular context. Most of the periodical courts are courts that also would be run out of correctional services facilities and out of police stations. So we still find police stations with a small court. And the problem we have with that scenario is that communities have raised concerns to the department at various fora, even these or primarily, where they say that they don't believe in the justice system, because to them, visually, what they see happen is that, you know, somebody gets arrested by the police, you know, gets taken to the police station, and at the same police station, that person gets moved to another room, and then there's a court right at the police station, and then from there, somebody gets, you know, gets dealt with accordingly. Especially when people maybe get sentenced to a term of imprisonment, the fact that the whole process takes place within a police station offends quite a lot of people, and they don't see justice being done. Even if there's nothing untoward happening, they read into what they see something untoward, that police, prosecutors, and magistrates collude. And because this happens in mostly small towns and in some rural areas, people then quickly refer to the free democratic representation and say this thing is still happening. So what we have again concluded with the minister's approval is that we basically stop using those facilities. So we stopped. We don't use them completely. And we have engaged with the various station commanders that we will never use those facilities again. And in order to support them, what we've done is next to that particular facility, we put a mobile court. So we specifically bought these mobile units, put them next to those police stations and correctional facilities, so that people will clearly see a distinction between the various departments of the cluster, so that at least they don't, we don't re-emphasize Ali's inadvertently in what they see as a flaw justice. So those 35 mobile courts that were deployed are deployed next to those sites where we have courts running in this facility. With respect to security, again, it's another area where we are not able to provide all of the courts that we have with adequate security. So again, we do this incrementally as part of our infrastructure upgrading, and depending on the budget we have, we then try to provide what we believe is most appropriate at any point in time. So most of the time, by a combination of those, we provide X-ray machines where we believe it's important to have closed-circuit television. We try and have them. Our intention is to really have closed-circuit televisions in each and every court. We think it's the easier way to monitor. It saves on cost. Because the traditional department is that you have guarding services. You know, you employ private security to stand guard at a court. We also view that may be costing us a lot more, because, you know, one guard is never enough for any court, so you need a couple to cover every court. So with over 500 courts, then they really push up the budget too much. So maybe if we try CCTV cameras, we can have one or two people just monitor CCTV cameras and then report or radio the police should there be any incident. But also try and use whatever we capture on camera as evidential material should there be any case that requires court proceedings. But by and large, I think
we didn't need another one in place.
I understand. Then we would be able to offer a much better secure environment. Unfortunately, security is a wanting area in the department, and unfortunately, again, it is an area where we don't have a budget that we can say in 1 year we issue a tender that covers all of the costs that are not currently secured. So we try and do this again incrementally every year. Where we haven't got security, we try and move forward. What we thought we could start with as a minimum is to rather put bugler bars on the steel doors where we believe it's appropriate. It's currently the cheapest, you know, we can do it and cover as many costs as possible at this particular point in time. And then try and put walk-through metal detectors and those types of things, which tend to be quite costly. On average, one scanning machine is about 250,000. So we're working on this on an incremental basis. But those are the costs that we covered this past financial year. Cash in transit, this is one area that should not be a main business of the Department of Justice. Cash in transit, we have currently, we need to have, because as you know, a lot of people still go to court to make payments. Some of you visit our court regularly to pay traffic fines, or at least ought to be visiting the court to pay traffic fines if you have them. So that is done in cash. You know, others go to court and pay in bail. So we have a lot of money in quite a large number of courts deposited within a court, and that money has to be collected every afternoon by late cash and transit people. Then in the morning, they also come and deliver money so that you can pay witness fees, you can pay maintenance money and so forth. Now, Chair, my submission to you is that this is one area we should be reducing as an activity of this department, because people shouldn't be paying money at court and getting the fees. I think we should, as we are currently doing, put in place mechanisms where people will be able to pay directly at the bank, and then we can just work off electronically as normal payments do. But we do have this service currently being offered. The problem with having cash in a bank is that it increases the risk for officials that work there. Because in some courts we do have robberies. People do pitch up and make deposits that that are really not appropriate, and then come and throw people off their money. But also it's a huge incentive for officials to steal. You know, if you walk into one of some of these cash holds, in fact, you find money nicely stacked, you know, like a typical bank. So we're performing banking services as a Department of Justice, and that's not our core business, and we shouldn't. So we should be moving away. So it's an activity that the committee chair can help us increase significantly and ultimately eliminate, so that we focus on the right thing. Most of the debate about the Department of Justice is about money that belongs to other people, and it's not really our core business. So this is an irritation we can do away with. We've then also spent money on a number of programs that create awareness about a number of things. We've embarked on programs to create awareness about the quality course, about which I'll report later in the presentation, and how to use the quality course. They're not used as much as we would like. I think people are still trying to get to grips with the notion of pursuing quality course. To get a remedy. We've spent money on programs creating awareness on the victim's charter and how to deal with those issues if you are a victim of crime and what services are available for you from which location. Then the last bullet point deals with Operation Isonzo, which is our maintenance program where we try and improve the delivery of maintenance services. Again, this is not our core business, because again, we're dealing with money that really is supposed to be paid by one party to another party in a private dispute. but the court system is used as an intermediary to pass the process. So we are really like a middleman, and that's been the tradition because, as I said last time, most of the court orders still by the judiciary still say that you pay so much money into court for the benefit of somebody else. We are beginning to work with beneficiaries to assist them open bank accounts so that money can be paid directly to them, and so that when they come to court, they'll be coming to report a default or they're not complying with the court order, and that's where our court business comes in, to assist somebody comply with an order of court. But currently, most of our activity is facilitating payments of money from one party to another. To that extent, to the extent that we do this, we have managed in the past year to persuade 13,000 beneficiaries to open bank accounts. These are people that previously didn't have bank accounts, they simply come to court and get cash. And do that regularly. What we've done is persuade them to open a bank account of their choice, and we then encourage them to receive the money directly into their account. And then we facilitate payments ourselves. You know, so these are people that no longer have to come to court to collect their money, but they we deposit directly into their bank account, or parties pay directly to their bank account. And again, this reduces the risk and reduces the incidence of inappropriate behavior, even on the part of our own officials. But right now, it's still a major problem, and it's something that we're working on. With respect to communication, we've dealt with communication as highlighted in the slide, primarily dealing with media inquiries. In looking at communication, share, most of the inquiries really still relate to problems that either the media or public would be reporting about what they see in the court and their experiences. You know, yesterday we had an article in the Star about the missing file and about the state of filing in the Jordan High Court. It's things like that that get picked up by the public. They are useful because sometimes they make us aware, particularly myself, about what the state of the court will be and where others have received an incorrect report about the state of the court. They're unable to follow up. So it's quite a useful thing. And we try and deal with these. Then where there are major issues or activities, we then do release our own press statements or in some cases an interview. We are trying to starting this Monday, we have an arrangement with Kaya where we'll run on John Kerman's talk show a couple of series where the department appears at least 10 times to address different issues about justice, just so that the public is informed. So those are some of the efforts towards enhancing access to justice for people. Information about the justice system generally appears to us more and more that it is something that is wanted in many communities. So we need to continue communicating this. On issues of crime specifically, for example, people still confuse what the responsibilities of each of the departments are. So the people who complain to the Department of Justice about police behavior, especially where it's inappropriate, and we have to keep directing them to the right location, or people who come to us raising an issue about correctional services. So people look at these things and clap them as justice and then come to the department and we try and direct them. So clearly it indicates to us that there's still a need to further communicate to people so that they understand which department has what responsibility, so that they properly get the assistance that they need. With respect to enhancing organizational efficiency, members may be aware of, but it's worth repeating, is that in the Department of Justice, historically, there's never been 16 of reporting. Most of the reports that used to be submitted never contained much by way of detailed information about very serious activities. So we are in the process of building those systems. You'll see, for example, if you compare this annual report with last year, this one has more information about really actual activities, very specific detailed information. It's not enough. There's a lot more that I believe we should be reporting, but we're just not able to get sufficient information that is worthy of reporting, purely because we still have to verify the accuracy of the information, the accuracy and the activities and so forth and so on. So in order to be able to do this, we must have systems. And what we are trying to do now is obviously modernize the department. This is one thing that this administration should be able to live in 2009 are systems of reporting that are good, that are credible, systems of operation. The department still largely works off a manual system. None of those departments that for a long time have never benefited from modern systems that the other departments have. It affects efficiency, things get lost pretty easily. So we're trying to deal with these systematically, and I'm glad to present to you here that we're of the view that we're on course as far as this is concerned, and we should be reporting progress. Hopefully by the end of this financial year, we would have completed a large number of these projects. Some of them are already completed. For example, the e-scheduler system. We have rolled it out by end of March with 436. We've just gone over 500 now, and there's only 12 courts that don't have the system for a number of reasons, including current construction, so it's not appropriate to put the system there. So we'll wait until those courts are ready. But by and large, this is a completed project now. We will no longer be reporting on it in this way. And what we'll be reporting is rolling out of the system. We completed that now, so we will now be reporting the information that we get out of the system. And as you know, the e-scheduler is the electronic capturing of docket information onto the system in each and every court. And every time there's a court appearance, we capture the information. So all of the charge sheets that go to court should now be captured on the system. All of the information that comes out of those charge sheets out of those dockets should now be captured on the system. And we will be rolling out, we have started, I'm slightly behind this, is the scanning as well of the information in the docket into the system, so that we really run electronic process in the criminal court. So that, again, if a docket gets lost, it shouldn't matter anymore because you recruit. If a charge sheet is lost, it shouldn't matter because you go back into the system and you print it out. So we brought out the system, every court has it. All that we're measuring now is utilization. So courts where the system is rolled out and they're still not capturing the information, we try and follow up because it skews the reporting. So if you want to know, for example, how many cases in the case of magistrate court involving juveniles appear today, the system should be able to give you that in the sense of the past. So you can get the type of information and you can really use it more for strategic purposes. We previously couldn't do it because of the manual system, somebody took over and do all of those sessions. But we can do that now. So that one is rolled out, and the second bullet point we are dealing with is we've bought 280 scanners that have been deployed. So we need to buy more and more scanners. And these are things we're trying to do. The last bullet point is a very good program that we're also rolling out. And really what is involved is using video postponements instead of having people make appearances in court for purposes of postponement. We're trying to persuade the judiciary to buy into this. Other members of the judiciary are still not fully on board with this program. We believe it saves a lot of time. As you can see in the end, where this program continues to run, where it was initially piloted, we managed to have 4,899 inmates have their matters postponed without ever leaving a correctional facility, which is worse than prison in this case. So all we do a video link that the facility is worse than prison, that is in the form of a court, and we put a camera there. It's linked to a camera at the German court, and the presiding officer simply walks to court and the person appears and then we postpone the matter. So nobody has to come to court. It moves relatively quickly because, again, you know, the various cases would have been communicated to correctional services, and then those people would just be lined up in the court, and it moves pretty easily. But this also gives an opportunity to do here is to actually run a trial electronically for the most dangerous, criminals where there's a great risk of flight and escape from custody. You know, you can actually run a trial by having them not leave the facility, and you maybe have a video link. So there are courts that we've identified where we're going to extend this program. Pretoria Magistrate Court, Pretoria Central Prison, and Port Elizabeth are other areas that we're currently in the process of ensuring that this system does exist. We're also making changes to legislation. We're preparing an amendment that will allow for a trial to run electronically, so that we do this. So we are moving in a way forward as far as looking at various mechanisms to improve the running of the course and also ensure that they exist. Next slide, the digital recording system. Okay, ours looks a bit better than this one. But what it is, we are removing, and we have removed successfully in many courses, the use of tape. What normally happens in the courses is no, the presiding officer would walk in and press and put a tape and that type of thing. We made that unnecessary. The system, once it is connected, they say 8 o'clock, it runs the whole day, it digitally captures everything that takes place in that course until you stop it at the end of the day. The difference in the system is that because it's digital recording, the quality of the recording is better. So when you get your records transcribed, you have fewer incidents where they are guessing the record, the figure to say inaudible, because of the problems with the analysis. We'll be finding that it's much better now. The enhancements that we have introduced into the system as well is the we just spent 29 million, which we've just reallocated this past month, is to make the system offer us a lot more things. For example, voice recognition. So when you present a case and it's a call, it should now be possible to download all of the information onto a CD and once it recognizes the voice as well to transcribe. So we're trying to make it unnecessary again going forward to get a CD, get it pre-transcribed and they sit and they do the transcription, which is what they currently do. So we again, are trying to modernize the system so that as much as possible everything runs electronically and there'll be fewer incidents of problems with the court recording. Also it enables us to connect to CCTV. The system is compatible with e-scheduling. What should happen going forward is that and again this is the vision, is that once all of the systems are properly connected and properly leveled up, you can actually put monitors in the court and people can follow the case electronically without having to produce dockets and the paper and all these things. So the e-scheduling system allows for electronic gathering. Dockets will be emailable to various parties. The docket is ready, you can email it by e-scheduling. And then if we're able to put these monitors, which I think we should aim at doing, presiding officer will be able to also follow the case on your monitor electronically without having to bring any documents. So that's the vision going forward. So the ability to do all of this requires chair that the whole justice network be put in place. We started this at the end of 2005, where less than 80 courts were connected with for IT purposes. We've connected all of our courts now, to the extent that we should now be able to use IT infrastructure and IT systems to run the Department of Justice. All that could happen, the court had computers, but all it could do was type a Word document more than anything else. People couldn't send emails to each other across the court because this IT infrastructure wasn't there. So we've completed that now. So the modernization, in a way, and the platform for modernization has been completed. So everybody can send an email to anybody, anywhere in the country. We can access any system in the department. So in a way, it's revolutionized. So that it's a shock to a lot of people who are not IT literate, but we are training people to make sure that this is not an issue. If it's a hard way of saying this, Chairperson, I can tell you that we take for granted that people can use computers. They actually cannot. And there's a lot of those problems. And they do have an impact on service delivery because people are just not able to be
a system. You know, my astonishment. Let me just tell you, I always started using email 3 years ago. and I feel so liberated from it. You should take me along with you. I'll tell them how I'm living in the dark age until 2 years ago. I should literally dictate my secrecy. I don't know if you know, we did a portfolio commission before the police and the local government as I was 38 pages. I had to dictate how I was writing. And then handwrite to make changes. So I would be a very good role model to you. Tell them how, you know, until I learned to use the property, I would be living in the dark age. So I'm very struck by the fact that the president of modern age. Why not just add, I mean,
listening to this, I was out of members, you know, it's something that strikes a new person to this community. Why is it taking so long to do some of these, what I say, are very elementary things? And you can come back to that. You were very budget constrained. You were telling that priorities, which was warranted putting this down on the list of speaker things to do. I mean, some of these things are so basic, it's just coming that it hasn't been done. But we'll come back to that.
Yes, I was coming back. If you can help us to show the judicial roundabout to the IT committee, because we've also found that they are the biggest problem, that many of them were giving the computer, which provided a lot of things. I think less than 10% in both high court and lower court can use a computer.
Yeah, what are the technologies you sell?
The status of technology. I don't know if you say maybe it's on account of age, but I think it is a problem. We're picking that up. And where people do call for assistance, when our IT people speak up, you know, we find people mostly they're forgotten their pathways, others can't find the shift button, others simply forget to turn it off. And I think the staff is not wrong. So we do have this problem, and fortunately we can provide a report that every call for help is logged onto the system. And you can check various levels as well. And what strikes me is that even in head office, we do have a lot of senior managers at director level and upwards that are IT challenged, still IT challenged, by just looking at the report and see who has logged a call, and then you get an answer what they have said call. The other problem that we have, and it will shock you because I did receive a letter from the magistrate in this paper, is that many want to play video games on the system. Because you put a software to stop all of that from happening. The first people that complained the magistrate. And when I inquired why they were complaining, they said, you know, they need that to keep and during the break, they want to be able to work on these things and play music.
You get lots of ideas from members of Parliament.
So those are, you know, there's a good and bad of this modernization, and it's beginning to work very well, but it also takes its own problems. But it's more good than bad. So we've done the same thing with the disease and sort of the state. And we're beginning to do the same with the guidance part. The JNAS system, we put that slide there deliberately because the last time on special assignment covered three courts where at the time we hadn't rolled out the system. People are still working manually as they're still currently doing, but it's much better now. And really, when we work manually, there are problems. There are really serious problems because there are thousands and thousands of cards or files. And the storage space is very, 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 very little. There we tried to target these particular courts. One of them was Odi, which is one of our biggest courts. And we now are running our electronic system there. I think it's much better than when the problems were first made known to us by special assignment, but the challenges are still there. So we're not yet fully satisfied that we have solved those problems, and they still exist. The other challenge with the department is the high incidence of use of temporary employees and contract workers. Part of the problem, or part of the challenge, is not really caused by the department, it's caused by the sheer demand for service and not being able to cope with it. On the Defense Estate, for example, after the Constitutional Court decision in Bay and Mosenete, where the net effect is that people could go to any court for participants to see the state. A lot of people started going to court, medical court in particular, nearby, and didn't have to go to the master of the high court. So where traditionally the court had never, and the department had never provided a service, all of a sudden they were flooded with people requiring services. And obviously because we can't send people away, we had to then employ your temporary worker to start providing service. And again, because thousands, basically just needed service, we've seen them living with those contract workers, while we create new posts and do all of those kinds of things. So because of that, we felt that again we should try and create an advisor for permanent posts performing exactly the same service and reduce the incidence of temporary workers. The obvious problem with temporary workers is that they have no loyalty to the department, they are there for employment and payment, and if there's an opportunity to commit a fraud or to do something untoward, one would find that somebody who knows that they're believing in a lot of things. It's much more tempting to get involved in something like this. So we've employed, again, various officials at those various levels. When we grew by 1,017, the actual figure as of today is about 1,700 as of last week. These are stenographers. They used to be stenographers, if you recall, using the old system that I described earlier, analog. Because we converted to digital, we also converted those responsibilities to full-time posts. Figure the stenographers, the part-time officials, they come to court, contract head with the service provider, do the recording, as soon as the court is adjourned, they go away. So in the department, we have no control over people that, in effect, are performing a very essential service. We've converted those posts into permanent posts in the department, and the majority of those people are now full-time employees of the department. So that's one part of the business that previously, I could say, was outsourced, that is now a core business of the department, as it currently should. So we had to create those new posts immediately. That's why we grew so phenomenal in that year. And those people are employed as court clerks, assigned to recording duties. If the court adjourns, they don't go home, they stay and work in the back office and perform other duties. So those are the additional officials that were appointed in the past year to try and deal with various services. With respect to the area of transformation, there are a number of bills, this committee is aware of them. Others have been passed, others are in the process of being passed, and they relate to a number of things. As you can see here. The ones that I'd like to believe are really, they're all really transformational, but I think one that stand out for me is the Jurisdiction of Regional Courts Amendment Bill, which is in the program of this committee for November, late November. That bill is, again, in my view, and as it's discussed in the department, and going to change the DNA of the family court. It's also going to give civil jurisdiction to regional courts. Civil jurisdiction currently vests with the district court and the high court. And the jurisdictional amount, so district court has jurisdiction of any single matter up to 100,000. Once it goes over 100,000, that becomes a high court matter. So in your normal property matter, property, let's say, in the township, the three bedroom house, it's already, let's say, 125,000. So the civil matter arising out of that property, it takes that matter to the high court. And then, as a litigant, you now have to get counsel and brief attorneys. It just takes that matter away, out of your hands as a litigant, and it creates problems. So what we are hoping here is that if we give regional courts civil jurisdiction, the minister can then, by proclamation in the Gazette, change jurisdictional amount and increase jurisdictional amount. For example, the minister could say, let regional courts have civil jurisdiction on matters involving an amount just about 300,000 to a million, and increase the jurisdictional amount of district court to up to 300,000. your ship could still be limited because what otherwise are currently high court matters will not be regional court matters and district court matters. It will have implications for the legal profession. It's a major transformation. I think access to justice for ordinary people again would be enhanced. Operationally, the department is going to obviously have to prepare for this and make sure there's appropriate administrative capacity, and the judiciary will obviously have to be trained, as you know, many magistrates in the regional court don't know anything about civil matters. So there is training going on. Also, the jurisdiction of the regional court will include family law matters, including divorces. So while currently one can go to a divorce court and the high court, we're adding the regional court as another area where somebody can go or she should be able to go and get a divorce or deal with other family law matters. So the family advocates will, with respect to their mediation method, will be able to use the regional court. So for us, what it does, it changes the manner in which we offer family services, family law services. From the kind of person walks into a court and says, I want a right to assist with a divorce, to contest a divorce where there's mediation, there's custody, there's adoption, all of those methods, it would be possible to have them dealt with in the regional court. So from a court perspective and from a legal profession perspective, if it was unattractive to run a practice today, we would like to believe that this offers a fresh opportunity to look at practice differently. It will have implications for the bar, obviously, because there may not be so many briefs, but it's a good problem to have, I think, for various players in the profession. So those views are important from that perspective. So passing them would be the main thing for us. The other one is the Judicial Services Commission Amendment Bill, which will deal with complaints and disciplinary matters and declaration of assets and interests by members of the judicial, in this case in particular, judges. The other key areas that I thought I should touch on include the review of the criminal justice system and where we are identifying bottlenecks in the system, very small basic things that just make it a bit more difficult to run better, which things create backlogs and contribute to the awaiting trial detainee problem. We've identified a number of things here, which include, amongst others, the fact that police officials and prosecutors make very little use of the provisions of the Criminal Procedure Act. If they use those provisions properly, a lot of matters need not go to court. For somebody that is, for example, committed a shoplifting offense, that person should be dealt with properly without making an appearance in court and achieve exactly the same objective. But we have establish a practice where almost every matter somebody has to make an appearance in court. The criminal procedure provides a number of ways in which some of these things can be dealt with without court appearance. So we waste a lot of time, of court time, on matters that can be dealt with differently than making an appearance in court. And we're trying to encourage both the prosecution services and the police to make use of these matters, just so that we can free the judiciary and other prosecutors to deal with matters that really are deserving of court appearance and proper trial and so forth. So the review of the criminal justice system identifies those types of problems. There are other programs with the judiciary to increase the pool of female judicial officers, primarily judges. Here there have been 19 were selected to 23 were selected to undergo a training program, which has instructed them that enables them to improve their skill base to render them appointable for judicial appointment at the High Court. The realignment of jurisdiction of magisterial court is another major transformational issue that the committee may need to develop a specific interest in. Because of the way the jurisdiction of the court is currently aligned, with main court, 66 branch court, and 230 periodical court, we found that there are situations in some cases where people cannot get a service at the nearest court because the boundary of their court, the jurisdiction of their court, excludes those people because they are across the street, for example. So there's no more boundary issue. We found that they do create a problem even where they are, that there are services that a closed court can look into. So we are looking at how we can realign the magisterial districts of these courts to make them in line with municipal boundaries so that communities don't have that type of problem. It's a main problem, especially in areas where we used to have homeless running, where there was various legislation to deal with issues arising out of those homeless. Some of the legislation hasn't changed, so for ease of operation of courts these days, we found that this does become a problem. So we're not doing a study where this is happening so that the minister can give courts their main jurisdiction. Johannesburg, for example, Protea Court in Soweto, which is the biggest court service in Soweto, is not a main court, it's not a standalone. It is a branch court of the Joburg court. So in terms of how the department used to allocate resources were allocated only to main courts. Branch courts, theoretical courts, used to get official seconded on a per meter basis by the main court. So we're trying to have these branch courts reassigned and reestablished as main courts so that resources are allocated to them. The legal services sector charter just speaks to itself. We're hoping to have the final charter adopted by the legal profession at the end of November. There were regulations passed, chairs, which just further improve the delivery of services, and those are the ones that I believe at this point in time are important to know. With respect to the second program,
we don't have a time to break it. I
would suggest by course of 12, if it's an hour and 15 minutes to be in our system, that's reasonable.
Court performance. Yes, we are not reporting as we should because we're still improving systems of reporting in the department. But to the best of our ability, the court performance tells you how we are utilizing the resources in the court. The most important statistic here is the one on the right hand side below the ground. The end of March there's over 7 million cases that were enrolled in the court. 720,000 or so were removed from the roll. In other words, those matters did not proceed to trial, did not proceed to final verdict stage. There are a number of reasons for this. So what it really indicates is that there is a problem somewhere in the system. You cannot have a situation where majority of the men, close to two-thirds of the letters reported at police level or investigated, do not make it to trial for whatever reason. So removed from the role, they are either struck off by a judicial officer or removed from the role by prosecutors. Majority of them, if not almost all of them, It's because there's not sufficient evidence to run a trial, or something goes missing in the document, either a process loss, or primarily there's not enough evidence. And we've been looking at this as part of the review of the criminal justice system to try and understand this phenomenon. Why do they do matters end up in this way? And there's quite a lot of things that are coming out of this, and some of which are already being implemented to try and make sure that these incidents are reduced.
You
talk
about
two
things
that primarily it's for further investigation. They arrive. It's a way we deal with the system. Our police system is such that police arrest first probably before they investigate. Which creates a different problem because sometimes when they investigate, they discover they are completely the wrong person, and then you sue government later for wrongful arrest. We have a lot of police. So our system is designed in such a way that something gets reported to the police. Police has information about people that are present in that particular vicinity. and if they, if any one of them is pointed out, they arrest you first, and then you make a court appearance. And it's obviously your first court appearance, the matter gets postponed for further investigation. And then if necessary, you are fine, you know, you get paid, and then you either are in a waiting trial detainee or you are outside. Letter gets investigated, the police will then bring it back. If it's ready, the prosecutor looks at the matter and makes a decision. If the prosecutor concludes that this matter is not ready for trial, it gets postponed again. And that cycle goes on and on and on and on and on. In another case, the prosecutor just believes that even if the investigation is complete, based on what's collected, there's not going to be a successful case. And for that reason, the matter gets removed. Either gets redone again, or if the police can't take it any further, that becomes the end of the matter. So quite a large number of matters of the 720 are occasioned by, amongst other those types of things. Then there's another way, either your case is lost, or main witness statement is lost. So those are the things that
Chairperson, this is not a vision old problem.
Sorry?
This is not a new problem. This is a very old problem.
Yeah.
This is a very, very old problem. I mean, they had a strategy of IJA. The police, the rescue services, and the judiciary, that they cooperate before a case is really presented for trial or the agency. I mean, that's the private section. The figure popped up here in the report. And there was a private property trial in Port Elizabeth, which is supposed to have run very well. And that was, I think, already in 2000. And this is the outcome. And maybe people forgot about that.
Well, it's just another thing that we come back to the question, maybe the DJ is not responsible. But also what we're not thinking about, if it's been done before, it doesn't mean we shouldn't do it again. We should call the other two departments in, or whichever. Call in the DJs of the departments. Let's get a meeting, bring them together, and we'll be there. Let's see if the departments that need for safety and security and ourselves can't work together and monitor it. But you see, what we also be clear, actually, I don't think oversight is involved. Just members of parliament coming here, holding our arms and saying, hey, why haven't you done this? What are you going to do about it? We also have to think more quickly to the job from our constituency offices to inform our caucuses of what can be done, to our government ideas. For example, on the e-scheduling thing, so we are visiting the local energy finance court shortly. There are things we could do, maybe, dealing directly with the people responsible to visit them and talk about. Let's think of ways what we can also do to assist. Doesn't happen overnight, but at least we can start to do the good we can. So we'll come back to the scope of the issue. And we'll recognize it as one of the key issues we should consider. And you also can think about a response to what's happened to the kind of project and its outcome. But we'll come back to that. You don't mind. Thank you.
Okay, if I can then jump from that slide, page 16 to 22. The slides of companies are largely on the stone, get questions one of the main most popular slides. Maybe the breakup, for example, the cost power that costs it. Point 22, what we are hoping to provide you as members here about is various matters that involve large issues, both on the criminal side and on the non-criminal side. What we find, for example, in each of those provinces there is that those are the figures involving children under 18 that are brought to court, which I think is important to report on. We're currently using under 18 because in terms of the Children's Act, that's the age of majority. We can further break down the figure to various ages, like under 7, under 14, that type of thing. But we thought, you know, it's important to give you this as another 18 issue. Then the appeal method involving those children. Then most of the cases of a criminal nature, it is then discovered that some of the children are children in need of care, but also even if they are not established criminals, but areas where children are involved and funded by need of care or the adoption method, or children that are placed in foster care. We thought we should provide you with figures as we pick them up. Again, we didn't report on this last year because we didn't have the figures. And what we started doing now is to look at quite decisively on all methods involving children from all sides. These figures continue to the next page, where they involve maintenance specifically and what type of orders they give. So those are the figures, the problem. It is possible to, well, not necessarily today, but later to further break the course in this problem. So if you're interested in the Eastern Cape in particular, you can get a breakdown for the Eastern Cape, and then you know precisely which course has what figure and so forth. Next page deals with maintenance methods and operational standards. And those are the figures that we've come up with. For example, we've analyzed over 56,000 inquiries for maintenance last year. And there are different orders that are given there. With respect to beneficiaries, either unclaimed money or supporters untraced, part of our program is to trace all of these people affected in this way. and pay off profitability is truly there. And those are the payments that we have made out of this dedicated program. Otherwise, Chair, this would have been money lying in the department, not accounted for. So we try to make an extra effort by looking for people that we believe should be coming forward to get otherwise out of there. 25, I'll skip to the fiscal advisor.
The next slide, I don't understand that maintenance part.
That's 17 million.
Then unclaimed money.
Yes, that was money that was lying there that we picked up was not being collected. And then we go into the file and try to find out whose file it is and where the person is and contact them to advise them that they should be coming to the court to collect it.
And what is the 440,000? What's the unclaimed money?
Yes, those are people again that that are not coming forward. So those should be put together. What we find that in terms of fraud, largely happen where an account is lying dormant for one of the sessions, and people pick up that the person is not coming forward, and then they start doing it. Where we specifically again gone up to trade cases, where sometimes it's not only the direct beneficiary, but it's children, like where maybe we say the mother or the father is not coming to pay maintenance money, and most of the cases is not. We can contact some of the children to say this is money that's very true that flows out of this particular person. You can come and receive the money. So all of those 1, 2, 3, 4 figures really relate to people that were trained, that children have never used to come, maybe so disillusioned that they don't come, to try and encourage them to come back. And others that are coming to court but they keep a month or 2 months before they come again. We just try and make sure that there's little money that should be paid out as possible, the main
what's the total amount that you then pay to make? Do you have a total? Maybe we can come back on that.
Yeah.
Because one quarter of 17 million was the total.
No, this is only unclear.
But also, if you look at the whole second year, it's not really clear what can be done. That's one of the things you're going to read. But we come back to the technical issue.
The next two slides deal with the state insolvency and the guardian fund. This is the state, because 17 is really where we decide to assist people and have the liquidation account and distribution account done. They're usually done by the executor and the executive on behalf of a family in most of the cases. And they wind up somebody in the state and the distribution of care. So this vary from area to area. As you can see there are areas, for example, where we don't have master offices, where we currently target into master offices, like Nespray. We don't have an office in Nespray. So the whole of Mpumalanga is there, but of course, and it doesn't make sense. We need to decentralize the service. The whole of KZN is serviced out of Pinamanisbeck and Dedo. It doesn't make sense. We have people coming from Sahel, from Pongola, traveling such long distances to otherwise receive what is an essential service that is available. But those are the figures there for the future state, for insolvency in those areas, and trust and curation, and so forth. The next slide deals with CRC methods. Post-CRC methods, where we are trying to face those identified that need to be assisted to deal with repairing the maze of their family members, where we are able to improve. So really the figure of 1,227 are beneficiaries that we are now trying to trace out of our, I think the total of 16,000 that were previously identified. So all of those were saved for these remaining 1,227 that we're currently trying to find out so that they can benefit out of it. There are other issues for you, of course, here, that we're going to put on here. that the remaining potential capabilities. The main flights deal with other budgets of other places to the various units of the department on page 32. Again, it's showing a further breakdown of net budget allocation. You see the goods and services is usually where we are constant money quite a lot. And goods and services relate to either consultants that we have budgeted for, or where we have anticipated a specific project for which we have received assistance from service providers, where we end up not doing that the type of work in that way. So that becomes slightly unspent money, and it will come out of food and services. Or where we have not employed officials, and as a result, we have not been spending charge for food and treatment, that should be a food and services budget. It's the main place where the department slightly has unspent money.
Just to clarify that,
food and
services will appear on page 32, Michael, that's right?
Yes.
Where you say that your expenditure is 95.5%. So, use a substantial amount of it, 96%. But the amount, the 4%, that you didn't use a large amount, just to say. I'm not sure why you're attributing your understanding substantially to goods and services if I see table on page 32. What am I losing you? We could go to this girl here because the Auditor General comments on the report and so that we have comments on that. We could go to this girl here. Now, let's put it on 32,
please.
Under program, we have goods and services, right?
Yeah.
And under that, your expenditure is 95.5%. What does that mean? Percentage expenditure. Do you need to spend 95.5% or
1%?
Yeah. So you spend close to 96%. So why does that constitute a substantial part of your understanding?
Generally it does, because we do a lot of reallocation in the middle of the year, around September, we do a lot of reallocation. I think they're possibly also looking at buildings and other pictures where we suspected that it's 55.7%.
Yeah, there's a substantial under-expense today, 55.7% is there, right? Overall, you spent 91.3% of your budget, is that correct?
The 261 is approved for the 261 goods and services, and I would think machinery equipment.
Now, treasury is a normal one, 3% is something you should understand, that's right? What is the figure?
2%.
For such a large budget, I mean, given my other experiences, it's not a substantial budget. I'm not sure whether this is about the right. Maybe I'm wrong. Is it Cameron?
No, Chief, maybe just an important point to note is that on page 88 of the annual report, in the previous financial year, it was rather understand. And this year they understand more. It was understanding in the previous financial year of 6.8, and this year there's an understanding of 8.7, and the treasury is 2%. So
it also depends on how much the budget received between the 2 years. Now, if we come back to that, again, we have to comment on that sort of thing. Obviously, TSMB issues the funding for this year's policy also should comment. Even if it's a pathetic to our next year, we can say that, whatever our outcome. But we will come back to that. Okay.
On page 23, we try and highlight the causes for the unspent. It's not saving, it's definitely the unspent money. And the point I'm trying to make there is that it's very slow that our second year. For a lot of employees that we're not able to have provisions filled for, there is a regular set. Because then, as I said, you don't buy equipment for those people that you have otherwise employed. And then in some cases, you don't that the family spend with service providers that you would otherwise not identify. The department is huge. I think it employs just over 15,000 people. So whenever there's 2,000-3,000 people that were not able to employ in any one year, there are those then there's the management trust project, which is ongoing but is not yet completed, but the triple C project. Capital work, this is an area where generally we spend very well. I think it's wrong to really say under spending capital work. We tend to spend most of our money. The problem we have here most of the time is that we get billed very late in the financial year by the various departments like public works, where they've done services for us. We get a billing in March, and I think that's why sometimes we have a problem of the March 5, and we try to engage with them that we need to get paid a little bit later. Other than our own contribution to the March 5, a large part of it is a change in part, in sort of best part of services that we perform. Page 34 reflects where the unspent money was reallocated in the department. So where we discover that around September we have money that is definitely unspent, we try and reallocate to programs where we hopefully can spend and achieve more. I think it's really not a matter of the federal funds, but the funds that's not pretty much in use. With respect to the auditor general report, the qualified audit relates to third party funds, which we can discuss later on in the discussion. And the new thing is asset management. There is a way in which we record our assets. So in the sample that they looked at, they found that we're not recording our assets the way that the treasury wants. It is a new thing, but we haven't done very well. And that's a cause for concern because it's new. Otherwise, it's something we should think better with. It's likely a recording of each and every asset in the department. There are measures that you put in place to try and manage on the particular year. But that type of fund will deal with you because that's an ongoing problem. I think for the next 3 years will be a problem. It's only 3 years from now, but I think it should get much better. Then there was an emphasis of NESA on this following area. I think I'd like to jump to page 41, human resources, which shows you the vacancy rate at different areas in the department. Levels 6 and 8, and levels 1 and 2, and 3 and 5. Are the areas. Those are admin scope, basic office administration, and that's also where people live and come in quite a bit. We have major vacancies. Judicial officers we exclude, so they're not part of it. They do account for some of the problems that we have, but we don't include them. Slide 43 just deals with, and 44 with the movement of people at various levels in the department, just so that you can really see and compare. Slide 45, I think, is important one because it deals with our labor relations area, where we have 304 cases either under investigation and disciplinary Most of these arise out of court. And like you believe, for reasons that I've explained, there's a lot of money and the high incidences of misappropriation of money, whether it's 50 rand or 400 rand. Okay, 46 deals with various programs to provide different skills in the department for officials at different levels. So that's ongoing work, it's really nothing much there. on the challenges. I think there's quite a number of challenges. The question is, which ones that the chess get should they really focus on in a systemic way? Then, control, we need to continue improving financial and non-financial control. We do have policies in place. I think the problem that we have is the officials that are not quite used to having a vigorous reporting mechanism. And it's very difficult to tell somebody now to start reporting on certain things that they previously never had to report. We have debate about the need for such reporting and so forth and so forth. So where we are strengthening control mechanisms, we find in the reports that we receive that a lot more gets reviewed, that we should put emphasis on. And also the skills, because we have a lot of cash, we find shares that in many of the courts, a lot of the people that work in the administration side of the court don't have now the financial skills to perform some of those functions. And we find that it creates problems with the court. So, in short, what am I saying about the department? Because we find that in the department that historically employed a lot of people and looked at real court business in an administrative way, in a general type of way. The way we find that we have in administration assessing real estate or which standard eight employees performing an activity that otherwise requires somebody maybe with a diploma in bookkeeping. We find a lot of those. And that's why we now have to spend money training those people. Some of them are not keen on undergoing training now, but even if they do undergo training, it's difficult to change the attitude and to change the facts that has been going on for quite a long time. The only time that you are able to make some inroads is when you recruit new people. Because now we put specifically the adjectiveness that will require people to take school. The modernization creates its problems because it reveals the extent of the problem that we have. So as far as human resource development is concerned, training people of IT and finance and so on. Remuneration framework for legally qualified personnel, why is that a challenge? Being dealt with, and I think the minister would be able to announce a specific destination for people performing legal functions that is improved, just like we've done for health, government has done for health and teachers, is that many of the services that are offered in our course are of a legal nature. But we don't have properly qualified legal people giving. So we look at maintenance. So people come and they say, I want to stay in a maintenance course. The service that is actually rendered as a legal service. But the way we get is that we've employed an administrative person to just help you fill in the form. So what you lose after the member of the public is proper advice about how to approach your life. Because how we look at it and how we pick up this problem is that if you and I were in need of such a service and went to a law firm, the person that would be assisting us with a qualified lawyer telling you how to approach your work case from beginning to end and what the scenarios are likely to be. We have broken this data services down in the department and categorize the filling in of the form and just basic things as administration, and then as the method progresses and gets complicated, then you start directing you to people. By the time you get to a serving advocate, your whole method will possibly be not appropriate with the advocate from beginning. So I'm trying to refocus, okay, what if we employ ad initiative, properly qualified lawyers, and they can help with administrative issues as part of the handling of the file as you would in a lawsuit. So we started now doing this. Most of our maintenance investigators, maintenance officers, are not people without LMD. It's now required because it's a new requirement. They started it last year. And you could qualitatively, it does show some improvement, but it's a long way to go. But then it immediately changed of your recruitment process because you're now focusing less on your unqualified officials. They're putting more emphasis on the legal and qualified decision. Maybe that we've argued is the way we need to approach the Department of Justice. There was a sense now that goes to the master's office. Who advises and assists people on decisions to say? We want to see that there's a pure administration, and when we actually shoot the lawyer, because of the consequences and the legal implications that flow out of the legal. So, again, it's less that I have to focus on what is the core business or should be a core business of the Department of Justice. It's a prosecution, and if you could provide legal advice in some of these issues. There are other issues about whether or not people should even be getting the services from the department, they should not be getting it from private companies. Because, you know, again, share one of the controversial, if you look at the services, you see what the legal is. It's a legal aid. It's a legal aid state. Should the Department of Justice provide it to the public sector? So there's a lot of things of a broad strategic political nature that we are saddled with, that we are providing solutions for. But again, to the solution, if you look at the standard of the business, is it our core business? Should it be given to the I think going forward, the guidance of the committee will really help with this too, because we may very well find that nobody should be coming to a magistrate's office to collect, maintain, and control the services. People should be dealing with it. These are private disputes. What they do say is that they close up the court system. Same with civil system. You find matters within private disputes that run forever. They close up the court system. I don't know, maybe you should introduce you that in private disputes. If you want to use the court, you pay a fee. Because again, you know, the state has to employ to use the process of dealing with otherwise a dispute between members in the line of corporate here over a initial method branching hanging over my office. And people who have money and fight each other, they ground for 3 years. And powers and powers of state. We still have a court system and what is essentially civil and the private. What are the services that the state is supposed to provide in a free of charge to the public or for its money? So we're dealing with all of these things and they even take care of the voters. But then we have to look very closely at how they should offer and whether or not some of them should offer in the way of their current system. They should be careful to give them. Because we continue to spend money finding solutions to what otherwise may be the problem we should be facing. That's how I approach chairing the department as a 100% where I'm taking it. I'm 100% nothing to account. There shouldn't be in this department in respect to this. So, that's the end of the presentation. Chair, and we can engage in detail in the data. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I just want to put very quickly, firstly, I see with the advocate Shah Muhammad is here, he has the Department of Justice and Western Cape Programs for him. Apologies for Mr. Landers, Burgess, and Jurgen for the reason, but they probably just say, can't be here. Look, we've got tea coming in, so the 18th is here. Yeah. They can just break for 5 minutes in the tea time, so that we know within half an hour we see this is going to end at 12:30 anyway without the tea time. But very quickly, we're coming to do this in four areas. One is the overall. You know, the issues around those members who are here in the committee. Do you think, between the time you got the last annual report and now, your overall sense is that the process is moving reasonably forward or is it unusual to walk around? This is to be for members. And then, you know, in this first area, one of the things that seems to be coming up from the GT, if indeed I understand it correctly, and I may be wrong with you, is that you're trying to fine-tune and become more focused. You're trying to establish what exactly are your core functions. You seem to be clear in the past 2 months of the day, some of these things you suggested are responsibilities of other departments and you need full brain. So what the message is, that you are asked, what do you think are the core tasks, or the core GT goals or objectives of this department? What are they? Trust me, all departments get the right all the time. But it does strike me that you ask some very fundamental questions, and I'm sure members here have got views on unified or then. The first quick observation from my side is that I think now that we get a report in response from you, we can rush annual report like this. It's far too limited time, it occurs to me. But if you get a quarterly report, obviously the cycle is this. When you come with your annual report, you report in the previous financial year. But when you come with your quarterly report, you're reporting on the previous financial year. But it would help because by the time you come to your annual report for next year, we'll have already received quarterly reports, which will make the evaluation of an annual report far more productive and faster and so on. But the other thing to say is that ideally you see what we would like in anything. I think the more user-friendly summary, where if you tell us, this is the strategic plan right, for the financial year, what is this plan? And then when we look at the performance, obviously, it has to be judged against the strategic
objection you have to that.
Yes.
You say, look, you wanted to, for example, what I found, I can't help you with objection. Because, you know, when I was in the court, I had some difficulties. One is, you don't have to ask it, there's so many people to think about trust. I only want members to pick it up. To the extent you think it's useful to you. Because, again, you've done this sort of thing for the last 5 years or so. Now, the chairperson is finding his own way of getting answers. Hey, I mean it. But the one thing that struck me interesting to me, I couldn't always work out what really belongs to the preserve of the department and what belongs to the administration of the court. Now, let me give you one example. 49 of the country, I wrote in the journal for the airport yesterday, 3.5 hours behind schedule, I won't bore you with that detail, at the first page of the Chinese for the Trump presidency. And it's got a different long story that says it's a privacy to the world. It says things like, the court system in chaos, the Chinese for the Trump, that people, the files are all scattered. People who work there can't find the files. So forget technology, they can't even organize the files. Then you will not take the order. And then, there are a lot of horrible things. I'll say the thing this morning at the first time the patient prosecution, which anybody can have access. You know, anybody can just walk in there and look for a file. This is a Johannesburg Attorney's Association that says they can put in a meeting with the court and can't get such a meeting. And then there's the story that although security is enough, then is anybody even now can walk right into the judge's office. Now, some of the things I can see are matters that we can ask and talk about. For example, the upgrading of security or in your area. But now, I'm not sure where the line becomes blurred here. You see, TV and other portfolios, you know, South African local government association doesn't build it up. Hey, which means the local government committee is responsible to all them before power goes to visit them. So what does one do here? Can't the committee? Since the Johannesburg Attorney's Association is such an organization, one to meet with the court management, or what seems to be a legitimate matter, and the court management is not compliant to the election, if that's the case, how do we ask the department to facilitate that meeting within 14 days? Or can't we insist that the court management meet within 14 days? Or can't we say, come to yourself? It's a national function, both of you. Since you don't meet in global fund. Class keeps on wanting to know what's the story, and then you sit in front of the parliamentary press gallery, which can never be trusted, as we all know. PNG, who always gets it wrong. I think your minister very assiduously. So, in short, I would like to know what is our role? How do we do that? So, what core functions? On the way you report annually, on the issue of making your strategic report, strategic plan to your report, the way user friendly stuff. On overall performance, is it better last year than now? That area. Can we focus on that a bit because it gives a perspective on what we can and can't do in this hour and 15 minutes. One thing that I must stress is, DJ, I know you're interested in using the job. But you complain, I'm only 2 weeks old. B, and I didn't want to come here. I don't know whether you
I don't want to come here. I don't know whether you want this job, but I suspect you did, like me.
You were not coming here. I don't know
how important here. First, the elections around the corner.
Well, who knows how to be around the corner? It's in Google Maps. Can I say that I really think, you know, the tasks you have are Herculean. The magnitude of what you have to do is enormous. And you're listening to you. So we're not directing any questions that in any way relate to your personal commitment or your team to it. And then, by the way, I think it's entirely possible, the Commission and I will continue the negotiations around it, for us to be rigorous and effective in our oversight, but in a way that's comprehensive. It's a creative tension to that. And I'm not one of you to discover, and I hope that you will hear me, to sit on my backside and make a lot of noise and do nothing. You know, we will contribute. And ultimately, we too, if you don't perform well, are reflected on. It doesn't work, problems are doing through. And our own constantly the last course is this year, which is why. So please, instead of fraternal way, it doesn't work. Or it's a gender useful word, but I don't want to worry. Instead of these were comrades, the opposition members will be upset. Instead of renewing.
So all those issues can get mentioned as you on the issue of the thing, four things are raised under the overview. Can I ask a question about Captain Rebecca? Do we feel the department is making progress since last year when we had the annual report, or what?
See, I think we can distinguish different areas. I think the data they're running in the fourth domain is a huge challenge. The problems that are highlighted by the staff and a couple of people. Staff, IT, backlog, user that have already been raised. Once you look at the whole financial, it was a general support. We had a number of years, I've been on this committee for many years, where we had qualified reports. Now we don't have a qualified report, so there's huge improvement. But the big issue is the third party. That the deposit, that's millions and billions of rand is money. And that's a major financial, huge area that we need to look into. And the DG said it's going to take another 2 years. If we need to go into that whole period,
maybe 3 years.
Two or three years. That whole private partnership aspect. So there are those huge challenges, and I think that you have pointed them out correctly. As to whether it's better, you can't say just, look at each area, finances, day-to-day, court areas, provinces, conviction rates, hours sitting in court, how they're improving, and the issues that are really touching service delivery are, of course, your maintenance issues, your domestic violence issues, and and the whole issue that the DG raised at the end about what's the role, the core function when it comes to providing services, putting in forms of maintenance, for example. And my question immediately is, we engage with the legal aid board to what degree, and they say we want to help, we want to start doing that work. So it's not your function. We've got indigent people that need legal advice, the legal aid board should be providing that service, but they are not the people. So there's that whole side of things as well. And then, of course, in the last comment here, the whole issue of you spoke about getting the various departments together. Now, this has been something that you've been saying as a committee for so long, because you have a domino effect with the core function is criminal justice. And you have your policeman who investigate, as Dr. Delport pointed out. If the investigation is not done properly, then it's going to be kicked out, and then you have high levels of withdrawal. Then you get your prosecutor, your NPA, and your defense attorney, and your magistrate, and your interpreter, and then you get your correctional services. So you've got all these departments that are involved, and the one takes to the next one, relates, and it says one postponement, and it relates in backlogs that relate to people waiting car, yesterday polls more, so the closer to the at least domino effects that you have. That's a whole other area that one can look at and have binding protocols with the various departments. So these are some of the areas. There's been some improvement, there's been some deterioration, particularly with that 70% that seems a very high level. So I can't say yay or nay, but I think the people on the ground are starting to be more and more frustrated going to court. That's been my experience. It's far too much, and that type of thing. So that is a big concern, service delivery at that stage.
Can you support the people,
in essence, we're ordering the aircraft from justice as such, and I must say that looking at the report and looking at the backlogs of things, I feel quite at home as if nothing has happened. We have channeled this a bit before. I was wondering, seeing that we are now going to work on a more regular basis in terms of reporting, whether we should take an initiative and invite the Bar Association and invite the attorneys' organizations, the attorneys' law society, to come and address us on what they perceive as being problems in the old system of a more fluent flow of cases, and that's exactly where the problems lie. After all, they are people who work on a daily basis, and I think we can get valuable advice and information from them. And that would be something I would like to table as a solution to concern.
If anything has stopped us from doing that, we can do that. We're not interfering. Okay, let's do it. Is anyone objecting to it? No? Okay, we do it. One thing that's emerging is processing is case faster. So whatever we need to do in that regard, we'll do. Just really quickly before I come to you.
It could be the general bar.
Sorry, general bar.
Yeah.
Okay, we do it?
Okay.
Yeah, and also he's going to go to a work meeting in 12:30, so we'll take him fairly quickly up. It's a quick question related to the issue, isn't it, Jagis? Yeah. No, if I may take addition to the general proposal, so the general part has said, to say because the general profession is not yet fully transformed, I think PLA and others should also be specified in
the
paper.
You don't think that you can take this from here? And then let's have the multi-tier thing. What are your main points? Glenn and then Bulanari and then...
Thank you, Chair. You asked the question whether there was any improvement in practice during the last year. Now, measures against their own priorities which they put last time, which was the March spike, the court hours and backlog, and understanding. To measure it against that, there's been no improvement. On the contrary, it is worse than it was. It is also worrying that vacancy rates are more than 20%. In all three of those respects, that's the March spike.
The March spike, in other words, the court hours and backlog,
and then of course the vacancy rate and turnover rate is also not acceptable. I recall that I last time asked for the performance contracts of the GG and the COO. And they said they would get the data, but we haven't received that. That could be expedited, please.
Okay,
let's
come back in a moment.
Chairperson, I think after I've made my input, I will quickly go to my question. Because I generally do not think that it is fair to say that there is no improvement at all. Because obviously, if you look at the report, but that is not all. You look at how many courts have been built in township. Something has never happened before. You look at the extent to which the department has supported judicial officers. You look at even the ST schedule. You look at the things that they have said. Those things indicate surely that there is an improvement. Because my problem is to evaluate the performance of the department on areas where they do not have complete control. Because if you talk about court hours, it's the MPA and the magistrates generally. And there are a lot of things that influence court hours. So I don't think that it's a fair assessment. I generally think that we should give credit where credit is due. But I think that also the strategic emphasis of the senior manager of the department, I think there is a sense that we are going somewhere. Having said that, I think we go to my questions. I think one of the things I would say is, as we encourage these people to open bank accounts, we must also bear in mind, I think it's important for the GT and his team to engage banks because of the high charges that banks have. For instance, if you get a maintenance of 200 grand, you might find that 20 grand can go to bank charges. That we must also look at that because we are facing poor people. And also what I would like to know from the management is how much has been lost by the state through misappropriation. Because it has been indicated on page 14 of the annual report that there were cases of misappropriation. And then also, I'm not thinking that it is only now that there is a policy framework on supply chain management. I think it has also been done long time ago. And then on page 42 of the annual report, Chair, I'm not asking a question, I think I'm expressing an opinion. Because you see, the more we create these institutions and we have these high salaries, because for instance we have the chief director of the Justice College earning 8 AGCs, whereas the chief director only earns 591. So why does this one earn 8 AGCs? And we have the MD of the Justice College earning more than entry level, okay, DG. Because it is going to be problematic that you have an accounting officer, somebody who accounts for him or to her, that person earns more than him. And
if the head of office at 1.1 million, but that includes the CA and
And then also on page 66, I still think a lot of effort should go to this office of the state law advisor. Because if they have to include advising local government, provincial government, and other departments, having 35 state law advisors with 2 interns, I think it's not adequate. And then also, I think we should look at ways of merging the state law advisors, the constitutional litigation unit, to be one big unit, because we have these many DDGs, and I think more or less their jobs are overlapping, their functions are overlapping. And then also, why do you employ under state litigation unit? Why do you employ advocates? Because there is no indication that attorneys positions have been advertised. It just says advocates. And then have all the senior managers declared their financial interest? Because when you wrote this report, it was 90%. So I would assume that by now you must be having 100%. Because I think that is also a risk if not all of them have not declared their financial interest. And then the last point, you have done your risk audit. But I think what we would want to know, what does your risk audit indicate as key risk areas that cannot be easily managed? And then if you have this risk audit process, why don't we have a chief risk officer who is going to be doing the enterprise risk management?
Thank you, sir. Regarding the question of the performance of the department, I would agree with Dr. Fuller and I to a large extent. But I think we shouldn't just look at the whole thing as the department. There's the department itself, there's assets portfolio committee, and there's also the ministry and the department. I mean, if there's no cooperation and doing our responsibilities here, then we get what we get. Right? And I don't think we should also, look at the impact of isolated issues, for example. Some isolated issues are mentioned here. We should look at it as a whole here, as a whole. We can easily criticize very, very heavily one isolated issue, for example, for hours, or maybe the capital of the court role, for example. There are many reasons for that, as the man has pointed out here. But I think the weakness of the department is that the weakness of communication. It's communication. Not only communication, but also delegation and also monitoring. For example, if you talk about assets, the reason why they haven't got an asset register is it was the responsibility of the regional head to put together an asset register in different provinces. But that has to be monitored. It would have been years ago. So, and I think we really need to focus.
Thank you. We welcome the second person. I don't want to appear at maybe, what can I say, maybe overconfident in myself. I think for me, for the committee, the issue of what should be called the Minister of Department of Justice is important. A lot of things get spent, and a lot of time gets spent on things that should fall really, really elsewhere. I think we need to engage in that. Especially if you look at criminal cases. I mean, the NPA has a lot to do with it. I think they have equal responsibility with the police, because, even on court hours, the judiciary will be in court if prosecutors put court, put cases before court. If there's no case put on the court, there's no reason for a judicial officer to be in court. So on the pressure system side, I'll submit chair that, we have to pay very strong attention on what is happening around the prosecution service. I know because I engage with them. Part of the problem, for example, is that they also have a lot of vacant rates for prosecutors. That's part of the problem. They've lost a lot of their prosecutors to the lower court bench, the magistrates, because of the salary issue, which we are rectifying. Hopefully that will stem them. And there's not a lot of good prosecutors around. Legal graduates don't necessarily want to be prosecuted. Still want to go there that are not as effective as working in a top commercial process, for example. So we do have the challenge of recruitment, and not every lawyer can make a good prosecution. So I think we do have those types of challenges. I think on the issue of general information, I want to praise the department in putting a lot of information before the committee, which I think is our core responsibility. We have to place before you all information that we can't hold back on information, whether it makes us good or bad. We want to place all of the information before the consumer so that you can see the issue. One of the reasons, for example, why the figures look horrible on the criminal side is because there's more cases that there's more incidents of arrest on the part of the police. So those resources we can see where they are getting. But I think also things like maintenance and gas response, it's because the reporting mechanism that you put in place are now beginning to give us a lot more information. So historically, my own sense as a public officer is that we've been underreported on factual and specific cases because we haven't been getting this information. So we've got to improve the reporting mechanism so that the figures truly reflect what is happening. I still want to believe that there's a lot more cases out there. There's a lot more happening out there, but we may not be capturing it. Okay, that's why the mobilization. On areas where I think correctly the members are raising the point around administration issues, we do have a head of risk, and it is a new position, it is a new unit of risk management, and I think we should see benefits out of those risk areas that they've identified. Most of the areas that are identified, they really relate in the overall scheme of the department. They relate to just ensuring that there's tighter control. We issue a lot of what we call DFI, Departmental Financial Instruction. And anyone that's been a manager will tell you that we can never run in a place by running a place by disciplining people all the time. We have to spend a lot of time training and coaching people. Even where people have made mistakes, have not complied with the financial instruction, we try and bring them along so that they understand the implications of what they do. But by and large, we have a lot of non-compliance. Because many of the things are things that are really, really new. So we'll pick up a lot of transgressions, a lot of problems, and we strongly enforce the policy and the financial instruction. And I think it's our duty to report on these things. And we will continue to show them.
you know, on the audit and on asset management. Asset management is still largely a responsibility of national office. Regional heads are responsible for ensuring that the asset register is in place in their provinces, and the court managers and so forth. I think the problem is just monitoring at a local level and ensuring that things are properly registered. I think the problem that is picked up is that on very small assets of about 5,000, like a teacher phone and so forth, some people just don't record, or some people don't record that I've moved a chair from this office to another office. They don't record it. So, you know, we just have to ensure, again, regularly that, you know, we do spot checks, and we do make sure that these registers are submitted. There are areas, you know, provinces that they have done extremely well, and they take the way the Auditor General commended them because they put dedicated efforts on it. So it's things with which we must be on a dedicated basis. The issue of money lost, I don't have the figures now, you know, through fraud and so forth. I think it's a high number. I think last time I recall it was just over 14 million or so, where we calculate money that we estimate would be lost through fraud. So relative to the money handled, it's not a lot of money, but I think 50,000 is too much for me. I mean, if it's not your money, it's not your money. So I think we try to deal with this thing on the basis of the fact that any amount is a problem, you know, if it is not properly accounted for. And we'll continue to do that. But we'll try and see what the exact figure is of money that, at least where we estimate that people have engaged in fraud. You know, the biggest challenge I think that we will have in the department is coordination with key stakeholders. One, coordination between the police and the prosecution service. If that's not dealt with properly, then we can forget about the problems of the case. Those issues arise every now and again. We have a lot of prosecutors that put cases on the road, that shouldn't be on the road, as I described, hundreds of thousands, where time is wasted. It's because of the way we measure them. We measure a prosecutor's performance by, you know, the conviction rate, but not by the manner in which, you know, you've resolved the problem. You know, in the same way that you measure the police, you measure them not by the same criteria of how many cases are resolved, but how many arrests they have. So as soon as they are arrested, they perform, because they can show the case. Now that's a problem, because an arrest means nothing. It's meaningless. It's case finalization that counts in the arrest. So it's in those areas where we need to, I submit, work pretty strong. So coordination between the police and the prosecution service is an important thing. The judiciary is also an important thing. We have a lot of judicial officers. It's a pity that when we raise issues about the judiciary, we are seen as interfering. There are a lot of problems, very, very big problems, Chair, you know, that, you know, will require some form of intervention. You know, we do have ill discipline, you know, in the court. We also do have areas where we don't see dedicated judicial officers. Because if, again, you know, people continue to not do things properly, we've seen that we have judicial officers that take another fair attitude, you know, where we get an impression they wouldn't be bothered because, okay, that's less work to do if we finish court hours early. And we've argued that there are areas where they can intervene and take control of the situation. And also the legal profession, I'm glad and I welcome the fact that the profession will also be invited to come and express their own views, because they're part of the problem. They're part of the problem with the postponement. They always ask for double booking, so all of those types of things. So it's a combination of factors. And every player, the department, the legal profession, and the judiciary, you know, no matter what everybody says, we all contribute to this problem, one way or the other. I think the advantage of them coming here is that, you know, they'll be able to express their views, and members will actually also ask questions, and we'll all be here to give our own experience. On the information about the court, we can actually provide through the chair specific information just on court performance and backlog and what causes the problem. I mean, areas like on backlog, Pretoria, Maritzburg area, those are the two key problem areas throughout the country.
you know, other than the fact that the whole region of court structure, but those two areas are primarily problematic. The legal aid board, there's a shortage of public defenders. People don't stay in the system. So you do have those kinds of problems. We can give information, you know, about specific courts, so we can even ask specific magistrates, specific judges, you know, appeal TPD, because what's the problem with appeal? Although the high courts really are really a problem. The chair asked a question about the administration of the court. We take full responsibility for the administration of the court. You know, that question is correctly ours. This is the problem with the filing system. There are statutes that require that you can't destroy anything under 10 years. Only files older than 10 years can be destroyed. So most of the files in the court are under 10 years. And many of them involve cases that are running. So they have to be stored in the court. They can't be taken offside. We've looked at options of storing files offside. They can't be stored offside because they're running messes and people request. So the courts themselves have run out of space, but the pace of litigation has gone high. So it keeps coming and paper keeps getting generated. Electronic systems won't solve it because it has the same filing problem on the network because of the load. You have to keep supporting it. So the question is, what do we do? I think it's a different debate. How do you deal with high incidences of litigation where there may not be sufficient space? We've engaged with ACAT to say, look, can't we find places where we can store? The arrangement of the files, we started working on, I mean, that picture is over a week old. If you went there today, you wouldn't see it like that. So we can arrange for nice ways of filing. If it looks nice and neat, the problem remains. You still have a lot of files, you have a lot of paper being generated. That's why I was saying the private industry, the legal profession, also has a role to play because these are their clients. You know, if there aren't alternative ways of resolving conflict and all we look at is litigation, we will perpetually have this problem because there's pleadings after pleadings being filed. So we must find other ways of resolving this so that we don't have the system clogged up. I can tell you that if we did introduce a user fee, so the rate will go down because people will quickly find this fee. But it is our problem. We need to deal with it. So I accept comments that in some areas there are improvements, in some areas there aren't improvements. But I think really an area where we have improvement is that this committee cannot be found wanting in the area of information. And then on areas where there's no improvement, I think it's likely because there are other areas where, you know, interventions have to take place to make this to make the system work as it was. I accept fully the issue on communication. I think it's a weakness across government. We tend to not communicate sometimes what we want to say. We tend to be oversensitive. We'll figure out as our problem in the department, and we try to do it, but it's not something. I think, you know, we need to do something more about it. Communication is definitely a weakness that we're trying to. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I actually didn't come in the room. And I would like to be apologized for the question and the opening.
Yeah, I got a
letter
from Mr. Flowers saying that she is unavailable today.
Alright, let's
then move on to these. It's not something that hinders the report, but Chair, is it possible for the DG to apprise us of the position of Justice College? What's going on there? How far is the investigation?
The investigation into the case, the court case, that's the police. They've advised us that they're hoping to conclude the investigation, and they've indicated that they may institute the criminal proceedings. So we are waiting on them. The official content remains suspended, to one of whom is having an internal disciplinary letter. So that's it. I'll say that they're on track. The unfortunate thing is that we have officials suspended and we can't make use of the nuclear resources at this point. But it is on track.
Thank you. Just on the point of communication, and obviously all these letters that are being removed from the roll, communication between justice and fact, is there on some level some sort of coordination or communication whereby the prosecuting authority sits down with the inspectors and say to them, this is how we want you to take witness statements? You know, who decides when a matter is ready to be put on the roll? And or is it just sort of happening arbitrarily and in a haphazard way?
It's not as a prosecutor that decides. I know in senses when you put it on a dead second of the particular thing, a dead second of the motion. And know that nothing happened, the police would go back and say, well, we can't take this to the court and evidence there. I think the main issue is overarching management. The example of course, it ran well. It fell apart when people were reassigned, police were involved, were reassigned to other areas, prosecutors were reassigned to other areas. And there was no ownership. And that's part of what you've seen in the review of the criminal justice, which you say, how can you have that arrangement on a permanent basis? There is a document I think that will be going to cabinet that tries to change. The other issue that is picked up, which the police have accepted, is that we don't have enough detectives. The relative issue to the cases and relative to the context, a lot of the police resources went towards putting guys on the street to police and do those types of things. But those people who conduct arrests, they're not the ones who do investigation. Those methods then get assigned to a detective. So relative to the cases that are received, the ratio of detectives is very low. And also it's a low ranking position in the police service to be detectives. So you have a lot of detectives that are there in the police service that apply for senior posts so that they get better remuneration and so forth. So you lose the experience. The police have also picked it up, we discussed with them, and we're trying to find solutions. I think Chair, part of the problem is not in the to fair to blame it on the police and the prosecution service. I think the public also has a role to play, because many of the cases as well also depend on witnesses, and some of them just don't want to pick up. Yeah, they don't pick up in court. So you find incidences where court issue warrants of arrest of up to an average 10,000 a month. That of people that were witnesses want to appear before court, and then they just don't pitch anymore. And the police spend time looking for them. And at some point, they lose faith, and those methods fall by the wayside. So the way in which we deal with witnesses also has to improve. And how we've been dealing with that, every time a case is brought to court, even if it's for a postponement, we require witnesses to be there, to be present, so that they are warned again to appear next time. We want to do away with the system, so that witnesses will only come to court when the trial starts. Because the reason why none of them don't come is because they're tired, they've been coming back and forth, and nothing happens, so they just lose the case. So we're trying to resolve those types of problems as well.
Yeah,
I think
that's related to this response, is it enough?
No,
okay, I'll give you more on this. Just to touch on the criminal justice review issue, and you alluded to it earlier, I raised this to the Minister in Parliament as active 18 months ago. So it's been ongoing, and you also refer to it in your report on page 22. Some of the practical implementables that you can implement. And you spoke about police officers and prosecutors, I presume you're looking at admissions of guilt as opposed to going to court. What are the other aspects that are around about that? Because that's your core function and the whole review. And you've got quick ways to quick introduction. And some of these I've been raising for many years. Section 63A of the Criminal Procedure Act. I sat on correctional services as well. There are so many people in jail that are sitting there waiting trial that can't afford their bail. Those are some of the issues that we've got to, and you said earlier about implementation of the Criminal Procedure Act that has just not been done. Now, to what degree do you continue to give instructions, do it, and then it's continually not being done? I mean, we have situations with prisoners of 500 grand that it costs 150 grand per day to have them in prison. So these are some of the challenges. If you could just comment on that.
The remark to the DT made regarding the judicial officer, because the lower court, But obviously, I mean, I'm sorry. Obviously, I mean, we have very high regards for the usual office at the lower court. Because they play, you know, they're the co-face of the criminal justice system. But what's the experience, for example? I wasn't there, reports which I heard when they went to go and visit the correctional service, for example.
Yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, to see all those, you know, juveniles, what we call juveniles, or children under 18, you know, having languishing in jail for such a long period. Maybe we should notice their person and try this committee to interact with the magistrate here. The criminal, which is Procedure Act, for example, certainly that they must be given the instructions on as to how to implement this criminal act. One of the most important acts is that the police will inform them about why they don't do it, you know, in order to facilitate, for example, I mean, certain matters here. I don't know. Maybe we should make a note here, but interact with the magistrate. And kind of find out why they don't do it. Why don't you look at this?
I'll the point you're expecting to see, as you know, that's a procedure that the head of prison, of a correctional facility, can utilize. Because that's the person that looks at the situation inside the prison, make an assessment, and then make an application by your affidavit to court to say, these are such and such conditions relating to this particular individual. We have reason to believe that it would be appropriate to change bail conditions, including releasing this person. We found that correctional services are not using that procedure at all as an instrument. So we started with it in May, we drove it from justice, targeting people whose bail has been awarded at least up to R1,000. Well, up, there's 10,000 awaiting child victims who have been awarded bail of up to R2,500. And we've been saying, let's use this Section 353 procedure, including the Section 352 procedure, to deal with these 10,000. In April, end of March, beginning of April, focusing on those whose bail has been awarded up to R1,000. Today, end of September, we have released about 2,800 using this procedure with correctional services. So they are really now using this thing, they are really, really pushing. And if they are lucky as a department and they are bigger, I think by end of this calendar year, of those 10,000, half of them will be released. The challenge is then the judicial, because some of them have started asking questions to say, but how do I know this person will come back to court? I can release the person, I can change the bail condition and make it easier, but how can you assure me correctional services that you can monitor me? So on the correctional services side of the class, I was picked up that we possibly need to employ a lot of people that will monitor these people once they are released and ensure that they come back, because then the police get upset. Because they say, well, now we are releasing this guy. One or two of them then commit another offense, we pick them up again, then there's a public outcry and some of them being released. And, you know, so it's a combination of these things. But on the use of the procedure, I think it's very vigilant. The only area where I can say we have a problem is housing, where we have a lot of applications but a very low rate of approval. Majority, they refuse. Because there's no buy-in. Like the shadow leader that tells you, I'll never agree. I don't want to. Because I don't believe, I don't agree. And we see it in their responses, they just turn it down, even where it's appropriate. So, yes. Those type of things we have, because you can then engage with the head of prison to say, why didn't you make this type of application? And where they've made an application, you can definitely see what the response of the judicial officer and who the judicial officer would have been, and you can interact with them. We're trying to do this as one of the ways to deal with this, but I think there are different pressures at various ends that make people not want to do it. The easy thing is to just have an income. Everybody forgets about it, and the measurement of success, because society measures as well on the basis of somebody being away, but where they've been released, it also is a problem. So it's something around which there must be continued engagement.
Right, because slightly around 15 minutes. Now, I think we should focus on two quick things. One, the cost of problems, what we want to say about it now, the cost. and two is the financial issues that I've already dealt with them. Now, very quickly, because time is running out, some things are occurring to me which really is a thing to think about. One is, I think your quarterly report should have a main theme. So your report should have every quarter and how you performing in respect of the goals you've got. But then you say, in this particular one, our main concern is court performance. So we focus primarily on court performance. The next one may be addressing the issues raised by the Auditor General in your previous annual report and so on. So that might help. So we get four of those. The first one will be in February next year, of the quarterly report. But looking at the court performance, you have found out that the many other actors also have to play their role. What we will try to do is get a meeting of the relevant committees, presumably Safety and Security at JAMA. We will have to have a meeting. And Safety and Security as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so those three committees that we're out, just note, we'll have to study early in the new year and bring us all together. And the DGs or their senior representatives. The DGs don't have to come, their senior representatives from the trust. And they now the rest of all three need and call senior officials from the department, not the DGs, we must hear senior people and see where we go from there. On court hours, just very quickly, you can do nothing about improving the court hours performance. It's not the same basic system.
The department we can do absolutely
nothing about it.
I'm not sure that it's worth our while. I would never measure court performance of court hours.
Yeah.
Because it's not a, it might be a true indicator. If case is finalized, that's what we should measure. You know, how many get finalized with a guilty verdict or no guilty verdict. Not court hours. Because sometimes an effort is too down to enable a plea bargain to take place or something like that. You know, it's not really necessarily a true reflection. The question is whether or not if investigations are done properly, we will have more cases running on trial for longer or not. I think we can. I think if a lot of time was spent and on investigations and the quality of investigations improved, we'll have a lot of matters running in the courts to at least justify an increase. I think on its own, the number of courts is low. You can't start court at 9 and lunch time is over. Many of the courts, after lunch, that day they're empty. You know, a majority of them. So we can't have that situation because what it means we're paying judicial officers for half a day's work, for what otherwise should be a fuller day's work. So notwithstanding anything that I've said, I think there's a lot to be said about the need to have more cases running, and that can only work if there is, on the other side, an improvement in the quality of the
reflection, but they are relevant. Now, our research has shown there is a gradual decline on page 13 of the well, this is 16, you know, we need to talk about our calculator, but the gradual decline of court hours set in 2004, 2005 for all courts was superior and local. And the whole lot of things, what I also suggest is that in order for us to have a better report, so because of the limited time, the Christine, we send this to your department. And then she's got various questions posed in Greg, in Greg's block. If you can get DG, one of your, within the next 10 days, we're not asking you to spend all your hours replying. In bullet form, you know, just reply to this. So because before we finalize our report, we have to have answers to some of these questions. It may well be that the questions are even themselves presupposing something that's not there. So we will give a copy of the report to the department within the next few hours. Is that okay? And then you will reply within 10 days to this. Okay. So on the basis of what happened in Johannesburg yesterday, we've agreed that we will call the attorneys and the lawyers here to give us their views, and we will call all the relevant officials from the department. But what practically can be done? Can a committee do anything about what's going on in Juba? Can we ask the department to do something? In short, what can we do about what we saw yesterday to help with staff? Partly it's in attendance
because
the pictures that they have there are without data since those weeks since they started filing properly and so on.
Yeah.
But there are many other things there in that report. For example, the Johannesburg attorneys want to meet the court management. Can't that be done?
that shouldn't be an issue. I mean, even as a body delegate, we can find out what the problem is. I mean, that shouldn't be an issue.
I mean, the many we're asking you to facilitate a meeting within 3 weeks, 21 days. Is that reasonable?
We'll do it within the next 14 days.
Yeah, okay, but we'll give you. If there within 21 days in our report, 15, that must be done. Secondly, is it appropriate for us as a committee? I want to ask them now and then, you should think that the same little fall is what's going on there. Something should be done. But if we do so, then they feel, hey, you guys are parliament, you're being embedded as the executive, now interfering in our role. Has this committee ever done this sort of thing? To say, we really are upset about this, we want progress, and we're going to call the department in 14 days to reply. Has the committee done this? Can the committee do that sort of thing? And we haven't done it, and is it worthwhile doing?
I know that we would, from opposition, we would issue individual press statements or something like that. I don't know if it's been done to the joint concern committee. But we often raise it on a one-to-one or raise it with the minister or something like that.
Usually
raise
outside on a one-to-one
basis. What I'm trying to say is this is Parliament needs to be seen ensuring accountability of the justice system of Parliament without interfering in the decisions that magistrates and judges make about specific cases. And one way of putting pressure, the department can't do it on its own, it's a confidence, is for us to say, I don't think we should do it in this specific instance. It's for us to say, as Captain General just told me about, just as I was getting onto a flight, and I said, look, I have an 18.5-hour flight, I'm rushing onto a plane, may not be related to this matter. But the Johannesburg based reporter. I don't know what it was about. In any case, in short, I'm asking you, even if it hasn't been done, shouldn't we do that? Like we used to do the commission of local government on municipalities. Now they would say the state is appalling. And then if you don't support your act out, and we would alert in that case because there was a concurrent thing, we'd alert the NEC and the portfolio committee, the standing committee, as it might be called, in the province to take the matter up. On two occasions, when the committee in the province refused to do, we consulted the lawyers in Parliament who said, yes, in a case, this is what they said to the committee, in a case where the provincial legislative committee is not fulfilling its oversight role, unless you challenge the court of law, go ahead and do it. You know, and it has been done. So in short, I think Parliament, without interfering in the role of the judiciary, should be concerned. For example, on my desk right now, I don't know whether this is my role. I'll find out outside. I don't want to bore you to define my role. We're not going to sit here, connect with me and check my role. But very quickly, I'll need some guidance. I have about six people written to me to deal with cases that are being held up. They write to me. Now, I'll talk to you, Carol, as a lawyer and teacher. What do I do? But I'm just telling you that one reason I think we should intervene is because I think it's legitimate, provided we don't tell them how to resolve the court cases. B, is that people actually writing to the chair of the Justice Committee. And what am I supposed to do? I can really refer the letter to the magistrate concerned and say, please, kindly, do something. I'm not sure what to do. In short, should we not intervene more actively in these things? And would it not help if there was some pressure? If there was a two-line sentence that said that the department appears before the portfolio committee, as this matter was taken up, the department said to the team to facilitate a meeting and already things have improved. Three lines, you know. They want to carry it, that's fine. One day when they got nothing else to write about, they're writing in two lines. In short, should we not play such a role?
Chair, I would really welcome that. The moment you accept that we have an oversight role, it means that we are in fact watchdogs. Watchdogs on whose behalf? On behalf of the people that put us here, irrespective of our party affiliation. We are representing the people out there, and if the people, if they have complaints, then we are the correct forum to view these, or rather to table those complaints. And I would welcome if we inquire from the department where there are complaints received by you. In fact, I would suggest where we receive complaints that we then channel it through you, because I also get inquiries.
Yeah.
Now, we must be just be very careful where do we direct. For instance, if it's a matter that's being not been making progress in the court. I think it ought to be directed, subject to what the DG says, to the NPA, director of public prosecutions, to find out what is going down there, because the prosecutor is dominant leader. He is the person in charge of that case. We must be very careful if there's a complaint about a magistrate. Because that could be interfering, and one will have to take advice, even if necessary. What do we do? Refer it to the Magistrates Commission, and in Supreme Court cases, refer it to the Chief Justice or from the to the JSC. But I think it would be a step forward if I would support that initiative that you've tabled here for us to be more initiative in terms of forcing a response to complaints.
It's not as if a statement is going to be the week and any other day. I just don't have the energy or time, apart from other considerations. Also, it can be counterproductive. You see, we want results. Now, if many people say, look, in a unit, I can get the results quicker. Once you start issuing a threat statement, they're going to get defensive and so on. So I don't need the DG's advice. But let's leave it like this. On this matter of Joburg, it is just signal to other courts also that they shouldn't get into the threat. Right? DG, you and I have a confidential role. Maybe there are things you can do diplomatically that a parliamentary committee is not required to be so tactical about. So I take it the meeting agrees that a brief, three-line sentence to say, we noted this as part of the constraint of the court. We welcome the DG statement that the filing system has already begun to improve and we'll monitor that. Right. And then we noticed that a meeting has been sought. We would urge that this meeting take place. Something like one, without unduly interfering, something I would say. And then the minister, the DG said that he would, or the department agreed that they would assist him. We said we want to report back in 21 days, which is not to say we're going to hold the DG for Victoria's report. Frankly, whether he sees it here, you are in the lab or something, just say, look, a meeting is taking place. You know.
I didn't think that in every case where there is a complaint, you should say more often than not, you would just direct a request to the NPA or wherever, or to the DG, please visit the complaint, give me advice on how to respond.
I think it's just signaling to people that today's job, tomorrow it could be. You're just embarrassing because in the paper that Parliament actually sat and discussed it. It's not the idea, it's just like a lot of press releases. But look, I will couch it and I will send it to members. But any member, whether from the ANC or not, is welcome to sit there. This is a real big issue in my constituency. Now, it's embarrassing to be the okay? So I commit myself over the constituency period in a way that recognizes the separation of powers to reach out to them and say, look, I'm the chair of this committee. What happens the first time I'm chair of this committee or the GG complains about my own municipality? So I go and have a little chat with them. Okay? But in a nice way, with a cup of tea and so on, I mean, what kind of those days, you know, and say that, hey, you know, you're answerable in a cool way. But now on the issue of finance.
Let's get one of the issues, because I'm going to give Christine's report to the squad. She's going to do it. So let's leave that aside. I mean, any issues that are
left? Beyond that, just clarity on the issue of the general bar sign for Tamil. I would suggest, I think you've narrowed it down just to the Joburg issue, but they might want to comment on that and other issues.
Let's get that idea.
It's more general.
We'll change it together.
Yeah. Yes, that's all.
They won't get across this term. I already love it. There are two versions of those coming. They're very quick ones. One is the renaming of the court on the US side. I've seen the draft. Where did you go to the state of advisory? No, the one that's renaming, of course. Okay, let me not hold you up. That's going to come and come. But at the latest February next year, we're going to call the relevant actors. You'll consult. You'll give ideas. Many of your lawyers will know more about this than I do. And everybody will be here. Not about the German issue, not generally. Now, on the issues of the report, the committee's report has to say something on this matter. What are we going to say? We've covered the ground. It was covered over television news, item one. I don't know why, maybe they didn't have something else to do that day, but it struck me as unusual to cover that day. So here we are. What are we going to say about what the AG said about the report of the department? We picked up some things that
she was already saying. Do you want to carry on and say, well, what do you think you should say in our report to Parliament?
Obvious concern is the third party proposal.
Yeah.
And there's some very serious statements in the AG's report about no progress being made. Should hesitate to say no progress, but we just need to look at that. That is obvious. It's a decades old problem. It's been inherited and there is progress being made, but it still remains a thorn that comes up every year. We need to say something about that and with the view to that public-private partnership being resolved within 2 years. But it remains, it's been coming on for many years. It's an inherited problem. No, not only laid at your foot, but it's an issue that needs to be addressed. So that is one issue that we need, because that's the main reason for the qualification.
No,
Carol?
Yeah,
excuse me, on the instances of that, it's the one point that Budolani raised as well, which we didn't address, was the non-compliance of the public service regulations in terms of the employees who have not declared their interest. And I think that the body should just tell us what corrective measures they have taken or are taking.
So let's take a few questions. We've still got the Pfizer report here. 5 minutes. You must get a reply from the team. Can I just also raise DT that from pages 20, when you give them the longer report, you know, the 20 to 23, she's got a list, Christine has, of a lot of issues, emphasis of matter, there's like several bullet points about what the AG said about your report, its asset management and what is called third party funds, and then value for money matters, all the filing issues. There's like 10 pages there, which you will have plenty of time to reply.
But I wouldn't mind, I'm asking you, DG, for your accountant, allocate to us somebody who will assist us to finish this report. I would also like to know who it is, because I want to grow quickly. The faster I grow, the more useful a chair I'll become. So when the team engages with that person, not all of it has to be on paper. We can have bullet point responses and a discussion where I'm participating, so I can also understand the issues. And that must take place within 10 days. Now, members, remember, I don't know how you did reports before, but the system that we're using is a generation. We do a draft. That draft goes to members to look at and so on. We also send the draft to the department, and that is high, because where it involves what they are saying, they have a right to correct it, if you're making their figures wrong. But where we are saying, this is what the department says, this is what the committee sees, then that is our section. This is what he sees. So, their members like Steve and others who might have things to add, will get an opportunity to do so now, will do so. But the report shouldn't be too long, Steve, as well. 10 to 12 pages. And about at least a third, if not half of that, should be what the committee she feels should be done. Now, on the issue of addressing this issue, DJ, in a nutshell, you see, you must have an incidental approach. You say it's going to take 2 to 3 years to go. We would like, when we meet next quarter in February, a clearer strategy. With clearer like time frame about how over the next 2 to 3 years you will resolve this issue. Also the committee, we left maybe in February, early 2009. We wouldn't want to hand this legacy issue to the next committee. We would like to have taken this thing substantially forward. In short, what is being done about third party deposits, what's being done on non-compliance, and let's leave it at that.
On non-compliance, you know, on the financial issues, everyone now has, those that have to be already participating. I think the main issue there was the miscommunication department on, because people did fill them, but they're not handed over to the Public Service Commission, and that really occasioned the problem. But there are a few that just took their time in submitting them, like in their agency. And those on the third party funds, the progress that we've made so far, we're looking at 2 things. I mean, on the NMIT, we have shortlisted 2 service providers. I don't know who they are, but the report I'm getting is 2 have been shortlisted. One of whom obviously would have to be chosen before the end of this calendar year. Then the negotiations over on the service level agreement with them start on what really would be expected of them. And we're hoping to have first delivery of the solution around about June next year. So
the next couple of months would be just finalizing contractual teaching. That's on the one side of things, on the PCP. On the other side of things, we are also on the department side rolling out what is called the justice deposit account system that captures all of the information about a particular matter. But in addition to it, we are trying to provide as well for electronic payments to take place immediately. That is currently being worked on before the end of this calendar year. The solution would be finalized, and then in the new year we will start. These two are complementary. We'll start rolling it out on all of the courts. So really, next year should be the final year in which we have this type of problem. So 2009 to 2010, that financial year, we shouldn't have.
In so far as the periodical court, I want to commend the department for taking a decision to do away with the periodical court. I was monitoring a case at Belfagan, next to Plum Street, and then the magistrate was appearing there for the second time. On a previous occasion, when he arrived there, he indicated that he objects. He doesn't want to set main office where the producer are using it to share the office with the investigators and the like. But on Tuesday last week, it was for the second time that it happened. And the minister was sitting in the car. It was terribly hot, with the result that he said he is not coming back to the same court next time. He had to postpone the case to Plumas Street. And then I had to say there were 35 mobile units. I think I'm just asking that they should also look for help again. And then secondly, also a comment. Want to commend you for the erection of the magistrate court at the Kangala. That's my constituency. Taking place, things are moving there. But it nearly went out of hand because the people were saying the contractor is not a guy from local, and the contractor also brought his own people to come and do the work. And then they would say, we want to identify this court with us. We want to say we deal this court, we place a place there. Now, simple work as digging the furrows, the cover point, the foundations, and the like, and say, why should it be done by people who don't know around this? We'll have to comment on the next thing.
Before we talk, can I just raise a procedural matter? After 3 pages of questions, and I haven't even asked all of them, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to meet with the media someday to cover them, but as a committee, we need to take some decisions, right? So one is, I think it's based on some of the discussions we had, we're trying to put our report that the Child Justice Board, this committee, is urging that it be brought to Parliament in the first quarter of next year. That we welcome some of the things I will put in as a draft, and then if the majority disagrees, kick it up. There isn't time now. But I'm alerting you to what will come in the report from my side, and I think the majority agree. The other thing is, we welcome the policy paper on the transformation of the judiciary. And we have to be safe. We're a bit surprised, I think, that it was attempted in an ad hoc way. And we now please, if there's no white paper, that is a judiciary policy paper. We would urge, I have raised this directly with the minister, we would urge that be discussed as fully as is reasonably possible with all the stakeholders, not least the judicial officers. So that when it's brought to Parliament, it's relatively consensual. We would urge that, the necessary consultation takes place. Then we notice that this committee keeps extending the life of official of the Black at the law saying, dealing with the traditional court system. Bearing in mind the sensitivity of the issues, and I've gone through traditional leaders, you will know, with the traditional leadership and governance framework process. But managing them and engaging with them, as you know more than me, as it says, the Malala is tough. So We also feel that those should come reasonably soon, but we are very loath, this is correct to say in our report, just carry on. We are very loath to extend that provision that we're extending here. Especially as the 5-year term of Parliament is about to lapse, both of the minister and ourselves. Would that be a correct thing to really want that provision? The other thing to alert you to is I'm thinking through these things that are going to come back to you and also to the relevant sectors of the ANC. I don't think a parliamentary program can be simply executive driven. This is not a presidential government where, you know, Bush comes to power and he says, this is my program and I'm going to get it through. There are some things that must be shaped by the priorities of Parliament. Parliament has the right, as the representative of the people, to say, Minister, you're bringing up 13 bills. You prioritize these three. We don't think so. We give the pressure to the committee, it should be the other way around or whatever. So I'm raising this, I'm not sure whether this is, we've done it before, but not with a committee that has thousands of pieces of legislation. And I'm not sure if public enterprises are getting this, but in local government, because the white paper was there, and ANC policy is very clear. We're able to even use the ANC policy against the minister to say, no, but that's a priority. So in short, because, as I said, similarly, you know, next year, if it ends early 2009, it's going to mean that by the second half of the next year, Carol's not interested in legislation. She's wondering whether she's going to get re-elected. We are wondering how long I'm going to survive in this commission. You know, when again. My aim, for those of you who don't know, is to enter the Guinness Book of Records. And having served the most number of committees in Parliament, Trevor Maggie calls me the revolving chair. I might tell you that most ministers are thinking if their chairs are going on maternity leave or paternity leave, there's units there. Next half of next year, and the DA is planning to defeat us. And the ACDC believes that they have a divine right to do. So next half of next year is not good. So please, can you read the whole system? I mean, I'll put that in our report, okay? But in the draft, you have the right to say, look, you think this fellow is not. We'll negotiate that. Thank you very much, everybody, especially the DG. I didn't see you, I'm not sure, but I'm sure there's lunch, is that right? Where's the lunch? Is that? Oh, just out the corner, maybe they can catch it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just scared to reveal it.